There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all point bulletins. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order. A new world order.
Attention.
Government
is the problem.
Is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Shut back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Touch Jones. Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
Hello, 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 hello. Are my headphones set right? Are we reaching our intended victims? I mean, listeners. What was that, Lou? Yes. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program, and we're coming to you live once again from the Central Valley of California at an undisclosed location as we stay mobile. We ran out of bandwidth. We didn't get enough money to broadcast when we go home tomorrow. So there may or may not be a show tomorrow. We just didn't get enough money to pay the internet bill, so we'll see what happens. We paid the electric bill, and hopefully we can pay the internet bill, but we're borrowing somebody else's bandwidth right now. That's what we do. We move around, we adapt, we overcome, but I can't live down here forever. I have to get back to the stronghold because rains start tomorrow, and we want to be there in case the bridges wash out, and I don't want to get stuck away from my gear. I want to be near my gear. So here it is. I don't even know what date it is. I think it's the I can't read this now. It's changed. I'm on the atomic clock, not today's date clock. What's going on with that?
You're blowing up.
No, I'm on the atomic. Yeah, I'm blowing up. Okay, it's Tuesday, February 15th. It's 5:03 p.m. Pacific time, and this is the Dutch Jones and Dingo Show. Not Dingo, Dingus. I forgot, Dingus. We renamed Lou Dingus.
Hey.
After his series of excuses and shortcomings the last 2 days, we decided to rename him Dingus. Everybody needs a nickname, Dingus. I don't know what that was. Lou's going to respond only in Morse code today because he's upset. Because I tried to turn the microphones on him early and he didn't like it. But anyway, it's another day. And we're bringing you the militant Christian worldview. That's what we're trying to do. We talk about current events. We talk about survival issues. We talk about things that are going on. And, of course, today I'm a bearer of, for the second day in a row, not surprising news, but bad news, that Shauna was given the death sentence today. After about 45 minutes of deliberation, they gave Shauna the death sentence. And so now starts about 9 to 10 years of appeals, letter writing, and efforts. Somebody said that they heard some Mexican individuals at work talking about this today, and then when he went over, he wouldn't let it stand. He explained to them what really happened, and one of the Mexicans looked at him and said, "Well, that's because she ain't got no money. She going to jail because she ain't got no money." And sometimes that's the truth, isn't it? If you can't get a good lawyer, you can't get a good case, you know, for defense. And so it's not, we're not going to forget about it. And if anybody wants to call in again today and talk about that, that's fine. We can do that. And Stacy's already crying. The phone number to call in is 559-346-8362. 559-346-8362, and that's AT&T. So if you're using your AT&T cell phone, I don't know if you'll get charged or not. I haven't looked at our bill yet. And don't forget that this afternoon from 6 to 7 this evening will be Senior Steve Klein with Code 20, where we're going to discuss more along those lines. Weird stuff going on in the Mideast again, more countries starting to see protest, stuff like that. Something interesting I found out, we are having our training in March for Code 20, but March 15th, the same date that we're doing our training, is being called for a day of rage in America. All of the libtards and student communists and, you know, all the anti-American types want the youth of America, the 15, 16, 17, 18, you know, early 20-somethings, to take to the streets and do what we saw happen in Cairo. So does that mean that the left is calling for the beating and raping of news reporters and killing of people and storming and breaking in of our historical sites? Is that what the left wants?
Yes, that's what they sound yeah. like it.
Yeah, it sounds what they're calling for. They're calling for a communist revolution. On one site it said, workers of the world unite. Where have we heard that before?
And kill people?
Yeah, so be advised that March 15th is going to be a day of violence for the libtards. So take that as it's worth to see if they really do it. You know, these idiots that critique even people who peaceably assemble, and now they're calling for violence in the streets. Border Guardian said, as someone on the Committee for Justice for Shawna Ford said, if she had the money, she would hire a real lawyer. Larson's record is bad. Yeah, we unfortunately, that's the truth about that. And I don't know any other way around it. But the fact of it is that something was rigged down there. Given the evidence, given the situation, given our supposed judicial system with the shadow of the doubt theory, there is no reason that she should have been convicted. And I guess it was, 11 women and one man on the jury. It wasn't a jury of her peers. She needed to have a different venue to get a fair trial. I'm sure that the judges down there, the prosecutor, all of them are all in bed with Dubnyk. It's all part of the drug cartel realm of control.
Corruption.
And that's just what happened. And I have no doubt. I can't prove any of this, but, you know, if something stinks like a fish, rots like a fish, it's probably a fish. I mean, you don't have to be in Denmark to know something smells fishy, right? So that's it down there. So now begins the 9 to 10 years of appeals, like I said. But we won't forget about it. We'll keep talking about it. We'll keep our webpage connected to their webpages. And you guys, those of you that have donated to her, when we find out the new information, because she's obviously not going to stay at the county level now. They'll transport her somewhere else. When we get that kind of information, we'll pass it on to you. Let her know that we haven't forgotten about her. Let's see here. In fact, hello, you're live on the air with Dutch Jones. Go ahead.
Hi, Dutch. It's Blaine Lawless.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you about what happened today. The same jury that took only 7 hours to convict Shawna only took 45 minutes to decide she gets the death penalty.
Yeah.
45 minutes. And so what they're doing now and what they're going to be doing tomorrow and however long it takes is they're going to be doing the mitigation phase of the trial,
mm-hmm.
where the prosecution says, yeah, sock it to her. And the defense says, oh, no, she's had a hard life. She's had a hard life. She's a little wacky. She has post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, they forget about the truth in the case, and they just start getting all weird about the conditions of the sentence.
Well, I think this is all she's got left. I'm not surprised they gave her the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's two issues here. Item number, the most important issue is she had to have change of venue.
Yeah,
she
key.
Would have at least had a chance with change of venue. And the other issue is the jury consultant, Jan Spaeth, S-P-A-E-T-H, and you can look her up on Google. The jury consultant didn't do her job if they seated a jury who convicted Shawna. You know, there ought to be some kind of mechanism when somebody's involved in the justice system where they don't perform well. You should be able to yank that money right back out of their bank account.
Yeah, that's one of those things. It's like if a mechanic screws up your car, do you pay him? No, you find ways to mess with them and sue them and stuff, but there's no recourse in the judicial system. You're a victim all the way around.
Well, yeah, and in theory, Shawna got the services for free because they were provided courtesy of the taxpayers of Pima mm-hmm. County.
Right.
So the most important thing in that trial was change of venue. It was not fought for nearly hard enough, although her lawyers did file paperwork, very detailed paperwork saying why a change of venue was absolutely necessary. They filed it twice. They failed in not filing it as an appeal
mm-hmm.
for change of venue.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I mean, even if you don't think you're going to win, when someone's life is on the line, you file everything. You throw the kitchen sink at the court system.
Well, if you're not part of the system itself and you're not playing completely for the home team.
Well, yeah, they are, you know, what do they call them, officers of the court, and they do what they're told. It's just one big grist mill, you know, and they need people to put through it to make money for the state and keep all the attorneys working.
And the sad part, too, is that if Shauna ends up on death row, her situation isn't going to be any better. She's going to be in solitary confinement.
Right.
Same old crap as in jail. If I go to visit her, assuming they allow me to visit her, which is, you know, I'm a known troublemaker. They may not allow that. I'll be seeing her behind a thick glass wall.
Yeah.
So they take somebody who's already had a hard life, who's been traumatized repeatedly, and then they re-traumatize her over and over and over again.
Well, sometimes that's who they seek out because they make easier victims for their conspiracies. You know, it's if she'd have been, you know, a soccer mom with 3.5 kids and a husband and all that, it would have been a little harder to take her down. So they go after somebody who that they a target they think they can actually acquire and take out.
But when somebody has traumas or deficiencies stemming from very early childhood, I also believe it's easier to take them and bend and warp their minds and brainwash them to some degree.
Yeah.
Than if you take somebody who, you know, had a pretty decent life, grew up with, you know, good parents, like me, for example, they'd have a harder time doing it to me. I'm sure they'd love to do it to me. They'd love to get me where Shauna is. I think I probably have significantly more resources than she has, and I could mm-hmm. survive it better, but I still wouldn't be a happy camper when I got out.
No.
It would be difficult on anyone. I wish there were more that we could say. I kind of feel like I feel very frustrated because the committee spent almost 2 years sticking up for Shauna. We put the website up. We started telling the truth about Shauna to anyone who would listen. The website is available to anybody who wants to look at. There's no monetary motive here. And we were shut down repeatedly. Major media looked at the website. You know, I've looked at the web statistics. I know who looks at it. Major media looked at it, and for the most part, they ignored 99% of what was on the website. Nobody would pick up any of our stories or carry them. And I'm frustrated because the outcome of the trial was this.
Uh-oh. Got cut off again. Are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, it like went real quiet there for a second. We got blocked there on your end. It's kind of weird.
I didn't do it. We saw the railroad coming. Six was in, just like you said the other day, and we weren't able to affect any change. And I have some specific ideas about why that happened, but I think that's something I'm going to save for the book. What I really need to do right now is I still support Shauna's innocence. I still believe Shauna's innocent. And I'm going to continue to say that she's innocent, and I'll continue mm-hmm. to correspond with her and visit her as much as I can. Mm-hmm. But right now, I have to turn my energy into writing the book, because the book is where the rubber's going to meet the road, and everybody who buys and reads that book is going to know the truth about what really happened in mm-hmm. Tucson, Arizona.
And that's the point. You've got to keep shining the light on it, even though it seems like it's overwhelmingly, you know, a victory for evil in this case. But everything I'm reading on the internet about it, it just frustrates me to see. Even in the articles they're writing, they're saying even the mother couldn't really pick her out of a lineup, but yet she was still convicted, you know. And just the stupid comments people are making on Yahoo. I hate Yahoo anyway, but the few articles I was able to find today, it's just, you'd think that this would be a nationwide story and that more people would want to know the real facts about it. So maybe that's why it was so suppressed. That's why there wasn't an ongoing daily coverage by like Fox News or CNN. They just covered the indictment. They covered the beginning of the trial, and then now they're covering the results. But they won't go into any of the facts, except for the local media.
I'm going to make an analogy here, Dutch, and maybe some of your listeners will. But I'll tell you this. Shauna Ford's conviction was as much of a feast for the left-wingers and the Shauna haters as homosexuals was a feast for the homophobes in this society, because the homophobes said, aha, they're doing immoral things, they got what they deserved. And that's the same thing Shauna haters are applying to her. Aha, The system proved that we were right. She's bad. We knew she was bad all along.
Well, what's funny is that people won't even, they didn't even know who she was before this or making comments like they knew the whole time. You know, you got some people saying, oh, I never met her, and then pictures pop up that they knew her. You know, there's pictures that, like, I can think of a bunch of people, but I won't dig that all up. But they're going to use this, and I think that this is just the beginning. They're going to go after other Minutemen. They're going to go after other Minutewomen, however you want to put it, people in the movement.
If there's any left after her being convicted.
Well, I think there will be, but I think they're going to be less vocal now. I think they're not going to be as willing to put up websites and to do stuff. So it's going to hurt the movement. I really think it is. I think that was, other than stopping Shauna from divulging whatever information she may or may not have had about that county and the people that live there, I think their secondary target, and a much bigger target actually, was the movement itself, to try and taint it. The same week that she's convicted and given the death sentence, ICE comes out and says, oh, we released 889 killers and rapists by accident last year onto the streets of America that were illegal aliens. You know, so they're putting one innocent woman in prison to eventually kill her in 9 to 10 years. But meanwhile, the story of them letting out over 800 and something violent illegal alien offenders is being ignored, too.
Well, one of the things that Shauna said to me when we talked about media before she really went into the trial full tilt, she said, I want you to do media interviews, and anything that you do, if Shauna haters come along and say, oh, she's horrible, she's dead, she says, I want you to ask them two questions, and this will shut down almost all of them. She said, ask them, how many projects did you work with Shauna on? How many border operations did you do with Shauna? And, you know, of course, all these people, they just like to repeat, you know, the verbal diarrhea that the media puts out, and they don't even know Shauna, but because it's just fun bashing her. I don't understand this, but they like, well, we've got an increase in hate mail on the website,
yeah.
Which I'm aware of, and, you know, she's gotten hate mail on her Facebook page as well, and it's kind of like, you know, 10 every day or whatever, and it's like, delete, 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 delete. That's why on her YouTube channel, Justice for Shauna, I don't allow comments unless I approve them.
Right, I've got.
You know, because I don't want to hear it. I've heard it already. It's like too much.
Yeah, I mean, getting comments from the brain dead peanut gallery is a given. We know that there are people that don't know anything about the case, don't know any of the conditions, don't know even the dates that they occurred, are more than willing to get on there and go, aha, look, we told you these Minuteman people are butchers, aha. You know, and just like the idiot that got in the chat room yesterday that made the comment that we deleted before anybody could really react to it.
Yeah.
What's funny is everybody in the chat room said, no, you shouldn't have booted him. We wanted to tear him up. I'm like, it's better we just let him go.
Because he had a filthy mouth.
But it's easier for these people to jump on the bandwagon than it is for them to get off the bandwagon and study the case and see there's a lot wrong with it.
Well, I have a Minuteman friend who doesn't live in Arizona. He lives far away, but he and I became very close and met over a Yahoo Groups list. That's how I originally met him. He's just a very strong patriot. And he said, you know, juries in this country have become a joke in the last few decades. He said, I would rather take 12 random people off the street, just drag them in the courtroom and make them jurors rather than go through the voir dire process.
Yeah.
He says, juries are a rubber stamp for the prosecutor. And I don't know how the heck the jury selection expert, and I put expert in quotes, went wrong in this case, but she went very, very, very wrong. I think that money that she made should be torn right out of her bank account by the Pima County taxpayer. She didn't earn her money at all. She doesn't deserve it.
Well, from our point of view, but, you know, maybe from the masters down there in Pima County, she earned every penny of her money because she did what they told her to do, find a jury that would convict Shauna and snowball the defense.
You know, I've heard other patriots say, you know, the level of corruption in political circles and at the top levels is something that the average person would find terribly shocking.
Yeah.
because the average person, we have morals, Dutch. We know the difference between right and wrong. Yes, we have political disagreements. You know, there is freedom of religion in this country. We have differences of opinion as far as that's concerned. We have philosophical differences. But, you know, the average person does know what's right and knows what's wrong.
Yeah.
And the people at the top who are corrupt, who are taking the mordida, they don't care. They don't care how many people get hurt. And as far as the movement being hurt from what's done to Shauna, that's true. But you know what? The movement hurt Shauna a lot. And the movement has been hurting each other. People in the movement have been hurting each other for some time. I bet this goes on in the leftist movement, too, to some degree, but maybe smaller because they're coercive collectivists. We're such strong individuals that everybody wants to be a general and nobody wants to be a private.
Yeah, yeah, and everybody's a self-proclaimed expert, too. You know, I've met guys that have gone to the border one time that I don't even tell them what I'm involved with, and they start telling me how everything's going on down there, and I'm like, when's the last time you were down there? And they don't know. It's everything. Everything out there is not what it seems. I call it the Oz effect. And when you rip back that curtain, most Americans, like you said, would be disgusted if they found out just what was wrong with our system.
I don't know. I'm very discouraged by the movement. That's pretty much all I wanted to say.
Sure.
I just wanted to bring you up to date. You know, it still doesn't look any better for Shauna. Not that it's going to get any better. And nobody on our side of the fence has heard anything from her for at least 2 weeks. It's been some time.
Well, the other side of the coin is it can't get any worse. She's got her back against the wall, and all she can do is fight now for her life for the next 9 to 10 years. And let's just pray that she gets a better attorney somehow, or her attorney gets kicked in the butt and he tries harder and does what's right.
Well, she needs a good appeals attorney. That's item number one. And the only bright spot about her going to prison is that most of her supporters are up here in the Phoenix area. And so there are a number of people here in the Phoenix area that can go and visit her a lot more easily than we were able to in Tucson, because she's going to be closer to where we live.
Okay, that's good then. And when we find out what things she can receive and how to get money on her books there, we'll be pushing for that too. I've been contacted by people that said they have boxes of stuff ready to go, but they don't know what to do with it now. I said, just hang on to it and find the new address when the time comes and send them then.
Well, the problem is that the jail in Pima County would not accept any articles of merchandise. She has to buy everything from the commissary. And if she needs phone calls or something like that, she needs to phone out. She can either call collect, or somebody on the outside can prepay for the phone calls, and that's something she can't take care of. So there's very limited things that she can do.
It's almost like they've taken her hostage.
Well, she's been kidnapped. She said, I was kidnapped.
Yeah, prisoner.
But they
of war.
Didn't kidnap my politics. I haven't changed my mind about anything. She's a very strong patriot as far as that's concerned. So I'm thinking that, you know, when she goes to prison, it's probably going to be the same thing. You have to do business with the company store. There are no other alternatives. You have to pay their prices, just like the commissary there.
Yeah.
I know that if you buy, like, a TV in prison or something like that, it's like $250. So the bottom line is we appreciate everybody gathering stuff together. It's good, but none of it can go to Shauna. That's what I'm assuming. I think everything has to be bought from the prison commissary.
You know, that makes sense from there. They'll cite security, like, oh, if she buys it here, we don't have to search it. We don't have to check it for weapons. And so
exactly.
Yeah. So that probably that makes sense logistically. I've never visited a penitentiary. I've only been to county jails where I've transported people or visited my own relatives. But, you can call anytime you like. You can vent as much as you like. That's what we're here for, Lane.
Okay, thanks, Dutch. I appreciate it. And keep soldiering on. We really appreciate your work in behalf of the cause.
We'll keep doing what we do here, and that's point out the ugliness and come up with solutions.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good night, Lane.
Bye, Dad.
See if I can turn this off. There, did I hang it up? I hung it up. Frustrating stuff, isn't it? You know, I woke up this morning angry because I knew that eventually by the end of the day I was going to find out that she was given the death sentence. So I'm just not over that. Some of the other things I did want to talk about today, and I'm not transitioning because it's easily forgotten, but just it's other stuff we got to talk about. Have you guys seen the news interview that was done with the assistant head of security for the San Diego port from Immigration Customs Enforcement? When questioned if there were any weapons of mass destruction found by any of his people, he said yes. And you could hear the public information officer off in the corner going, no, 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 no. He says, well, not here at San Diego's. Well, where were they found? So now the cover-up continues. And then an article came out today from AP saying that the northern border is just as bad as the southern border, and it's being neglected. They're trying to shift the focus of that there are, in fact, terrorists operating along our borders, and that there are, in fact, terrorists coming into the United States. And they have brought weapons of mass destruction. Several years ago, an ex-Special Forces guy brought a 55-gallon drum with all the mechanical workings of a nuclear bomb, a small one, without the, the fissionable material or fissionable. Is that what you say, fusion? Without the uranium or whatever was needed to set it off. I'm no physicist. So it can be done, it has been done, and one guy let it slip in San Diego, and now he's probably working somewhere up on the north shore of Alaska, making sure Russians don't take pictures of our fishing fleet. But there is a threat along the border, and God help anyone who gets in the way of the United States using that or exploiting that to enslave us. They will throw you in prison and kill you. Shauna's proof of that. So we have one warrior behind the wire. We have many. Shauna's just the latest. And we've got to remember that our borders are still insecure. We're still at risk from manufactured, manipulated, blowback, whatever you want to call it, Islamo-fascist terrorists killing us. We're at risk from our own government killing us. Nothing has changed. And it doesn't matter who's in office. It doesn't matter if Obongo's in office. By the way, if you go to DutchJones.info and click on videos, you'll see a new video that Lou put up that's a compilation video he found on YouTube of all the lies and mistakes and misspoken moments that Obongo's had. It's very funny. I encourage you to look at it and spread that around. But they're covering up. They're doing everything they can to distract us from what's really going on. We've got them importing Chinese international financial zones, which we'll talk a little bit about when we come back after the break. And if you'll notice, the chip ends at zero. Go to DutchJones.info. Make a donation. Any donation will help. We can't pay the bill unless you help us. We're about $50 short already. I'm a neighborhood, not our own. We'll be back after the break. The little streets of Belfast in the dark of early morn. British soldiers came running, breaking little homes away scorn. Hear the sobs of crying children, dragging fathers from their bed. Watch the scene as helpless mothers, watch the blood fall from their heads. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Not for them a judge or jury, or indeed a crime at all. Being alive again, England's name again is sullied. Take away our sons, but every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Came to take the wire again. Back. This is the Dutch Jones radio program coming to you. How are we coming to you? Are we coming to you loud and clear? Can you hear us? Are we in the red? So why'd you stop it?
Because that was the end of the song.
That, it just ends like that? Wow, that was terrible. Not meant for everyone. This is the Dutch Jones radio program. We're coming to you from Central California behind enemy lines, right in the middle of communist-occupied People's Republic of California. And I just say that just to let you know why we sometimes have the weird attitude we do, because we can't do anything. We are so held to in a tyrannical state that sometimes we have a bad attitude. Sometimes we just can't believe that other people in other states aren't up in arms complaining about the things that are happening here because they're going to happen there. And then, boom, suddenly you read the newspaper and other states are getting it. South Carolina, a politician there wants the state to develop its own gold and silver-based currency in case the Federal Reserve collapses, when it collapses, and hyperinflation ensues. I think that's great. South Carolina, you know, this person there's got it, you know, he's got his finger on the pulse of what's happening. It's Senator Lee Bright. He said, if folks lose faith in the dollar, we need to have some kind of backup, he said. And he told this to the Spartan Herald Journal, journalist Stephen Largan. His bill asked a committee to look into the development of a state currency, citing the Constitution and Supreme Court precedents to prove the bill's legality. A state can coin its own money. And I think more power to them for doing it. Remember the big hoopla over the Ron Paul dollars and they went and raided everybody? I think more places need to do that. Make your own coinage. Make your own, you know, if you're going to print fiat money, it might as well be at the state level. At least you know it'll work inside your state. And with inflation going nuts and everything, I think this is a great idea for states to do it, and hopefully more will catch on. Speaking of states getting weird, you guys watching what's happening in Wisconsin? Have you guys seen that? Am I still in the chat room? I know we got bumped there over the break. Is everything okay? Sounds okay now? There we go. Yeah, I don't know what was going on. I think Lou was playing pinball or something while he was on the air, and he was messing it up. He loves that pinball.
Pinball.
You hate pinball. How can you hate pinball? It's the greatest game ever.
It's repetitive.
Yeah. It's what?
It's repetitive.
It's what?
Repetitive.
It's repetitive? Wisconsin's governor says he can't pay the pensions and benefits and all this to his state employees, and the unions are going nuts and threatening all kinds of strikes and violence, and they want to have their own day of rage. So he says he'll call out the National Guard. You know, we don't play that here. And so you've got governors threatening to call out the National Guard against his own state employees. And, you know, I don't know where to come down on that one because I don't like the National Guard being called out against civilians, but I hate unions too. I had somebody on my thing go, yeah, man, on my Facebook page go, yeah, I side with the communists. I said, not me. I killed communists, and I deleted the guy. But we're seeing more shakiness around the country, aren't we? We're seeing more signs of just mass like rats from a sinking ship, they're noticing that, hey, the federal government's not going to be there to bail us out. You know, they're talking about the budget that came out today, Obongo's budget. It's ridiculous. It doesn't even address the deficit spending. The cuts are ridiculous. They don't have any effect. And the Treasury guy said today, in 20 years, it's going to happen again, even if we do make these changes. So just pushing it off on future generations. I am thoroughly convinced that, you know, this is the end game, and I don't want to use that term making you think I'm talking about the movie end game, because I don't necessarily believe that it's a bunch of cannibalistic Chinese that are doing this. I think it's a bunch of greedy capitalists and New World Order types that are doing it. And I believe that this is the end result of them destroying our economy. China dumped a bunch of debt of ours. They put it back on the market, and Great Britain and I think France bought it up. I may be wrong about that. But two other countries, Germany, I think it was Germany and Great Britain, bought up a bunch of debt. And everything's getting more expensive. Fuel prices, I don't know about where you're at, but gasoline is heading towards $4 a gallon here in California. I saw $3.60-something a gallon for diesel. And if you see $3.60 a gallon for diesel, that immediately means that everything at the store that you buy is going to go up in price. I watched Glenn Beckett, Glenn McBeth or whatever his name is, Glenn McBeck, the guy on TV. I watch him every once in a while, and sometimes he gets it. I don't like his overall mode, but I like some of the things. And he was saying a shirt 6 months ago that he could buy for $79 was now $88. He was showing these shirts, how everything's gone up. Since Obongo's been in office, this huge amount of inflation, and they've printed more and more and more money, that there's a built-in, I like that, Whirlin, that there's a 6% taxation built into the inflation of the money every time they print more money, plus goods just generally cost more because of inflation, so there doubles the impact on our pocketbooks. And that's what they're going to continue to do. They're going to continue to price us out of buying luxury items and having to buy the things we need to survive, so we won't be moving around. We can't afford guns. We can't afford ammunition. We can't afford survival items, so that we have to spend them just to tread water, our money, just to keep our kids clothed and going to the zombie schools. I think it's all planned. I think they're compressing the time frames because, you know, when the head of China visited Obongo and told him, hey, you're not doing this quick enough. You know, we own you now. We're in control of you. You know, your boss is my boss. He's ultimately just Satan. But they're picking it up. The time frame's increasing. So if there's something that you haven't done yet, something you haven't acquired yet, you better find a way to get it. I don't know how much time we have left. I don't think it's going to be a big boot in the middle of the night rounding us all up, you know, coming in and kicking in the door. But the gradualness, the waves eroding the shore are picking up. The frequency of those waves is picking up now. Like, Stacy and I are trying to figure out, what do we do next? Do we fix a vehicle? Do we buy a rifle that is needed? Do we, you know, what do we do? We've got a small amount of money, and we have to use it wisely. And I'm sure everybody listening to this is in the same boat. Make your decisions over these next few weeks very wisely. Consider everything you do. The time for the big screen TV or that trip to Maui, I don't think anybody in my listening audience has that kind of money, but no more. Those days are gone. Those days are gone. And quite frankly, what you can buy for a big screen TV would be much more useful than that big screen TV. I still don't understand why people do that. I'm sorry, and I don't mean to insult your largesse or your trophy of your success, but to own a big screen TV in these days is irresponsible. I read an article today where you can buy homes all across the United States for less than the price of a brand new car, $30,000 to $50,000 for beautiful homes. But what they weren't telling you is that the house on either side is probably a crack house. They're in places like Detroit, New York. One was in a town in North Dakota that was so depressed in the winter they have 90% unemployment, but you could buy a house there for $15,000. All of America is hurting now. All of America is hurting right now. That's the one thing we have in common, even with our leftist friends. The difference is that they're doing it for their, you know, their leaders, and they're like, oh, they're suffering, they don't mind. We know otherwise. We know otherwise. These trials that they're putting us through here are just meant to destroy us, not make us stronger. But on the other hand, we can turn it around, and we can make it. We can make it. We can become better, bigger, stronger out of this if we just focus on what's really going on. If we focus on these key events and use them as time indicators as when it's time to get out of Dodge. And it's time to get out of Dodge now. I have to take off my headphones because I'm getting a headache. It's going to be a tough one. I may have to just let Steve do the whole next hour by himself. We need to quadruple our efforts now. When governors are talking about sending out the National Guard against labor unions that are working for the state, that's kind of scary, folks. And you can look at it either way. It's scary that a governor would do that, or it's scary that a governor needs to do that. I don't know yet. I haven't decided where I come down on this. I don't like unions. I can't stand unions. They've long outlived their usefulness. There was a time for them, just like dinosaurs. There's a reason they're dead. We don't want a bunch of dinosaurs running around now. We don't need a bunch of unions running around now manipulating governments and companies into raising prices. I stand behind it when I say that the unions are what killed Detroit. The unions are what killed Detroit. NAFTA and all that was a result of trying to get it out from under the high wages that were mandated by agreements. Now, you know, we've got Border Patrol supervisors stating that, yes, there have been weapons of mass destruction brought in, some, you know, around the country. We've all known that was true. That was no big surprise to us. Fox News is going nuts over it. They keep re-showing it and re-showing it and re-showing it. But you've got to take what you have now, add it all up, look at what you can jettison or sell or trade, and start getting ready for this thing. Because it's seriously going to happen. At the very least, the least of my expectations is a major financial collapse where we don't have to worry about the New World Order. We have to worry about public disorder. I've been through riots, folks. I was there during the Rodney King riots, and that was nothing compared to what we're going to see. 72 hours of violent rioting followed by 4 days of mild rioting, that's nothing compared to 6 straight months of total chaos in our cities. Now, whether or not the New World Order will swoop in and take that opportunity to take control, maybe or maybe not, I don't know. I don't know. I have no way of knowing that, and I don't think anybody really does except for the people that are making the plans. But you've got to put your bug-out plan together, focus your funds on that, focus your funds on training, focus your funds on maintaining what you have. If you've got everything you need now, go double, go depth. Start doing your caches like we talked about yesterday. I need a bolt action rifle. My bolt action rifles aren't living up to it. They're just not working, and I got to go get one. So that might be a sacrificial thing to spend $200 or $300 on a used rifle. But I need a rifle. We can get our car fixed. Which car are you talking about? It's not that expensive to put in a gasket. We need an oil gasket on our oil pan. Stacy here thinks the car's going to explode. It's just an oil leak, Stace. It's fine. So talk it over with your families. Figure out what needs to be done, and then you, as the head of your family, make the decision. But you've got to do these assessments now. You've got to do these assessments now. Because when the knock comes in the middle of the night, you're not going to have time to get out a checklist, are you? When you see on the news that the city next to you has fallen into disarray and that they're bringing in Chinese troops or Canadian troops or Mexican troops or whatever they're going to do, do you think you're going to have time to go foraging through your garage? Do you think you're going to have time to sit there and argue with your wife about whether or not the oil leak is needing fixed now? No, you take care of it before. And everybody has to be on the same page, or there's no point in you even sticking together as a family. I know that sounds harsh, but if you can't get your spouse and your kids to jump, when you say jump, they're going to end up killing you or other people in your group. So you better make dang sure, I'll use dang as a emphasis there, that they understand what you're doing and what your group is doing. Because you shouldn't be doing this alone, if you listen to our advice here and the advice of better men than I. Test your communication links now. Test your transportation routes. Make sure your maps are where they're going to be. Make sure everybody has their gear and they haven't lost any of it. Make sure that the batteries and everything you need to run what technology you have, or otherwise be ready to function without it. It's shakedown time. It's as if when you're in the military and you get your warning order that you're going to have a mission, and they give you the basic parameters, not the details, but the basic parameters on how what you're going to need. You start going through your gear. That's what this time period is. This is God giving us a warning order. We know our general mission. Now we're going to get specific. And we need to do it as soon as possible, people. One of the things I'm working on right now is, because we have a stronghold, we're not in a city, I'm taking a second and third look at how we're going to produce food after there's no more food shipped to our community, because that's going to happen right away. We're way out on the peripheral. I mean, we're not off the grid, but we're definitely not a major concern for anyone where we are. So we're looking at the garden this week. We're looking at our chicken coop. We're looking at different. We just found out this yellow flower that grows in abundance right now is edible. One of our neighbors, because my daughter, remember that, Stacy? Our daughter went and picked a bunch of yellow flowers for our neighbor, and they ate them. And we're like, what? And they go, oh, yeah, we eat. She's from, like, Finland. She's like this heavy Norwegian, you know, Norsk accent. Yeah, we eat these. And I'm like, well, what are they called? She goes, I don't know, but we eat them. Throw them in. I go, what part to eat? She goes, everything, flower to stem. That's what I'm talking about. That kind of knowledge is priceless. Miner's lettuce is growing real good now. There's so much out there. The poppies are growing. I don't know if you can eat poppies. California poppies, are they produce the hallucinogenic effects of like Afghan poppies? Anybody know? I'm not sure. I have no idea. I think I'm getting dehydrated. Let me take a drink. I'm getting a headache really bad. Stand by, everybody, while I chug from the jug. It's the Dutch Jones chug from the jug moment. don't know if you heard that, but I was chugging from the jug. Are you playing music? I took my headphones off. What Morse code? What was it? The message? Chug. Lou's picking up on Morse code now. He's, you know, he figures that's a great way to embed some signals. But don't you think the New World Order knows about Morse code, Lou? No. What you got to do is come up with code words, send them in Morse code, like, you know, my ears are made of chocolate, and that means something. Oh, that would take them about 10 seconds to figure out, but that's a good idea. Reverse the dots and the dashes and come up with your own, or just come up with your own Morse code. You know, but that would be really hard to do real fast. How fast are you at doing Morse code now? Can you do? Can you simulcast and don't blink your eyes at me. He's blinking Morse code to me like he's a prisoner of war. missed any response, phone call, have to listen to podcast. I'm in northern Indiana. That's where General Carver. Okay. Did we lose the first part of the show when we dropped?
Yeah.
Oh, so we'll have to wait for the, hopefully Olima's there and we can post that instead. We had a little glitch. It's turning out to be about the same as you broadcast, but better quality, I think, over here. You could sell the poppy, but then the government would hate competition, yeah. Well, we have California poppies everywhere, and they're starting to bloom. And I've always wondered, there's got to be an alternative use for these poppies over here. I don't know if they have medicinal purposes or anything like that. But, yeah, if we started selling drugs, the government hates that because, you know, they don't like the competition and and such. One of the things that we've been looking into on the Internet has been used camping equipment, stuff like that. That's always a good thing, and I bring that up all the time because people always, well, where do I find it? Go on eBay, go anywhere, go to your secondhand stores. If you have nothing right now, this is the first time you've listened to the show, stick to camping equipment, camping food, stuff that you can carry in your backpack and be ready to bug out and carry. I've been watching Restrepo, the movie on Afghanistan, the war in Afghanistan. And there's something that I've really noticed about what they do. Their terrain is very similar to ours, very high, very steep. They started at about 900 feet, and their battlefield's all over the place. I think they were at 1,500 feet at one of their LPOPs. And moving that amount of gear, you really need good backpack equipment. The amount of food it would take to actually do the journey and water you're going to carry is more than you can carry for the situation we're in. I mean, it's 40 miles to the nearest major city where I live, but I wouldn't go there anyway. But if I were in that major city and I was going to come to our stronghold, you got to do an assessment. I tell you right now, I know for a fact I could not do 40 miles. At least not at the pace that, you know, Lewis or some of the younger guys could. So I've got to be very realistic. So rather than getting gear where I can make a long trek, I need gear where I can go into the mountains and I can hide. Camouflage netting. An entrenching tool. Some tools to dig right into the hillside. It reminds me of the movie Ride with the Devil. A Civil War, post-Civil War movie, War of Northern Aggression, about some Confederate guerrillas. And they built a dugout next to a partisan's house out in the middle of the country. I think it was Missouri. And they hid out there in a dugout. Are you willing to do that? Because where are you going to go? Where are you going to go when this thing sets off? Especially if you're a small group or just an individual, just a family of three or four, you're going to have to hide. So start working on your hiding plan. Like I mentioned, camouflage netting, tarps, camouflage tarps, ropes, things that you can construct a shelter with. The dugout is a great idea for a shelter. As a history student, I found that most of the Union posts out in the American West, you know, they always show the like F troop with the big palisade around and all that. Those were the exception. Usually it was a few half structures, you know, wooden structures with tents on top, if they were lucky. Kind of like the Boy Scout setups at Boy Scout camps. They'll have like a low wall and they'll put a canvas tent on that. But the reality is most of them lived in dugouts, kind of like Dances with Wolves. They lived in dugouts. Are you ready for that? Do you know how to construct a dugout safely? Have you even thought about it? Let's see. General Carver's asking me, any good sources of information that you can recommend, Dutch, for data on planning, hiking, moving teams, etc., IG logistics, travel data, like how much water a person... Yeah, I would... The Ranger's Handbook, a Ranger's Handbook is a really good source for that. And you can just Google that. Just look for a Ranger's Handbook. And a lot of the Special Forces small unit manuals are good. Do we have the Ranger's Handbook up in our list of stuff?
I don't know.
You don't know? Lou doesn't know, even though we uploaded them all.
No, that page is down.
Oh, that page is down? I thought we still had that up.
We're
all
using Steve's pages, which has like a bunch of them.
Okay, so he might be able to find them there. I didn't realize we had lost that page, Lou. But yeah, anything to do, current military manuals or current era, like back to the 60s, on guerrilla warfare and stuff, will have all that kind of stuff. But those are good things to know, like water consumption, that type of stuff. If you're going to do a 50-mile hike, you know, what is it really going to take? Know the terrain you're in. And it's not just enough to go Google Earth it, because if you Google Earth the church at Cahuilla, just do Cahuilla, California, 93237, and it's going to pop onto the post office, and you just scroll north, you're going to see our little ranch there, and you look to the west of us, it looks like flat terrain, and it's not. It's very steep terrain, very, very steep terrain around our ranch, so much so that cows get down it, and they can't get out of it, and they have to come rescue them, because it's a known fact the cows can't go back up when they come down, right, Lou?
They can't go downstairs.
Yeah, they can't go downstairs either. Yeah, it's just like dogs can't look up. Those are known things. But the terrain, it's misleading to look at it through Google Earth. You've got to get some real maps of the area, some of USGS, is that what I'm saying? Maps that show the relief, and know how to read that map. And once you realize it, say you know you're going 50 miles, and you go, I can only make 10-mile jumps because I'm a big, fat, old guy with diabetes. Every 10 miles, you better get good at hiding caches. And I'm telling you, it's not that hard to do. The hard part is getting them in without people noticing you. What I always like to do when I did these is use the excuse, oh, we're geocaching. We have a little club. We use our GPS and map skills to hide stuff. And that's all we're doing. Can we hide, can we put some items on your property? Yeah, then you just put a 5-gallon bucket with some supplies out there and hide it in some rocks, bury it, whatever, and put your real geocache thing there. And then when you come back to check it, you have an excuse to go back. A lot of people are like, hey, that's cool. You can look up geocaching on Google, find a site, and just use that as your cover. 5-gallon buckets can hold a lot of stuff, folks. A lot of stuff. And you can cache it. So I know that's about as far as I'm going to make it. I remember one day, this is 4 years ago when I was even in worse shape, I walked 8 miles one way, and I thought, man, I got to turn around and get back now. And I made it about 2 miles back, and fortunately, I think it was the pastor's wife saw me and picked me up. She knew I was hurting, but I've gotten better since then. I've lost about 50 pounds since then, but I'm still not in tip-top shape, and I would slow anybody down. So I know that stealth and pre-planning are going to be my only friend. I guess taking an assessment of where you're at and being honest about it is key. Don't think yourself a Rambo. Don't think yourself one of Robert's Rangers that you can, go 100 miles in a day. And be realistic in what you can carry in your pack. Don't overdo it because you'll drop dead or you'll have to leave a trail of items behind you and they'll use that to find you. For me, it's like I'm watching these patrols on Restrepo. They're going out with just their, basically their survival vest, their plate carriers, and some snacks and stuff, but they're not going out very far. They're probably going out 2 or 3 miles because that's as far as they can go, and they come under attack. And they have a huge, logistics behind them to drop them ammo, drop them supplies. We're not going to have that. And since you can't carry it, you got to pre-stash it. But I guarantee you, if you just do one route, you're not going to be able to get to that route. You've got to pick at least 3 routes. Tom, Dick, or Harry is the terms that we use. The Tom, Harry, the Dick route, and the Harry route. It comes from The Great Escape. Those of you that love old movies, true story. They had 3 tunnels. They named them Tom, Dick, and Harry. They did that because they figured the odds of the Germans finding at least one of them were pretty high. So you've got to have that same attitude when you're trying to escape from the cities to get to your stronghold or just out of the area. Have at least three routes. A mountain bike is much better than walking. Yeah. The problem with a mountain bike is, I've done in my younger days when I was in college, I did a lot of mountain biking. And once you get off regular made roads, which is what you're probably going to be doing because you don't want to be seen, it's almost better just to walk. The only time they're good is on the downhill and the wide open stretches, and you're probably not going to be taking wide open stretches. So I can't, unless you're really, really good at mountain biking or you think that the roads you're taking won't be watched, yeah, they'd be okay. Maybe moving at night on bikes. I have nothing against bikes. It's just I've always thought about them that way. General Carver saying, what about a hand cart or something to drag gear behind you? Excellent choice. If you think about the Mormons when they came from, I can't remember where they came from, but they came across the Oregon Trail, they all had hand carts. You can get a long way with a hand cart. And what I'm thinking about, and I'm glad you said that, would be one of those game trailers. You could put a lot of gear on a trailer, a little two-wheeled trailer that's designed for carrying a deer, and take turns. Make a harness up. Don't just do it with your arms. Make a harness up and take turns. Might be something that you get the teens to do, like Lou. Wow, that went fast. I was ready to give up here, and next thing you know, it's time to go. We're going to be back after the break. We'll be on Liberty Tree Radio with Steve Klein. We're going to be talking about what the Muzzies are doing, what you can do to fight back, and more on cell warfare. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back after the break.
My land, men walk free. The Bill of Rights is the guarantee. Second Amendment was written for you and me. In my land, there's liberty. Here I stand with my gun, born free, native son. Blood in my veins runs a American. Here I stand in my land with my gun. Has a price. We must defend it with our lives. And here I stand with my gun, free. It is the blood in my veins runs American. Here I stand in my land with my gun. Here I stand in my land with my gun. Here I stand in my land with my gun. The Second Amendment was written for you and me. In my land.
And so many other groups that he's part of and started and things like that. Steve, can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. You sound great. I'm sorry your computer overheated. I will put my cognac with ice up close to it and we'll cool it off and get going.
Great, great, great. Wow, yeah, no matter what, we keep the program going. I can't monitor the chat room, so you guys just talk amongst yourselves. We're going to continue the shows if nothing happened. We just can't run commercials or take breaks. We'll just hum for 30 seconds in the middle or something, because now we can't play any music. I need to know if it's overdriven or anything over there, Stace, so ask him how it sounds. Because I know how Steve's is always the same, but mine looks overdriven here. Yeah, no, your mom can do it. Let me turn that down. Okay, so it is time for Steve. What do you got for us today, Steve? Sorry about the rough intro.
No problem. Once again, we've done so much for so long with so little. We can do almost anything with nothing. Hey, March 12th, we got training for us, but the commies! The commies got their day of rage. The commies got their own code 20. You know more about it than I do. You just introduced me to it, but you gave me enough time to think about it. So on March 12th, the commies with the Muslims are supporting the Muslims, and what I see is it's their form of code 20. They're calling it the day of rage, and in order for them to do what they want to do, which is alter or abolish and reinstitute only based on the insanity of communism, and they're going to do that Saturday the 12th. And go ahead and open up. Let's talk about that, and we'll go back and forth from their code 20, day of rage, to our training, our code 20 at the Church of Kauai.
Well, what I found by scouring the net, and I had first heard it of all places on Fox News, which, you know, they're sometimes good, sometimes bad with their information. Sorry about that hum that's in there. We don't know what that is or where it's coming from. But it's just the nature of what we're doing here with what we've got. The Day of Rage, they're calling for a day like they saw in Cairo, like it's going on in Yemen, and I think Bahrain was the other one. And the students, 16 to about 24-year-olds, want to take to the streets, want to scream about change. And I don't understand, like I said this before we were going on the air, they're guys in control. There's a Muslim socialist in the White House. So why are they taking to the streets? Well, it's to add to the chaos and to strike violence. They want to support their Muslim brothers around the world, they said, in these American communist groups that I found online. And I guess they're going to, like today, I guess it was today or yesterday, they grabbed the CBS female reporter, 200 guys beat her and raped her. And left her for dead, but some people saved her. So I guess that's what we're looking forward to on the 12th in America. They want to do just like their Muslim brothers and sisters are doing.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, and that fits perfect with Code 20, because our Code 20, our good Code 20, they're doing the same thing. It's cell warfare, and evidently they think they're strong enough now. They think they're well-organized enough now that on March 12th, they can come out. They will create havoc, chaos, violence, and mayhem, and then they hope to use that more or less like Lenin taking over the Soviet Union. What was going on in Egypt is still going on, believe me.
Yeah.
We're monitoring the Muslim Brotherhood on the Arabic websites. About 75% of the people in Egypt are cheering Sharia law, Islamic law. And going back to what Dutch said, the day of rage and the communists, now a lot of people don't realize it, but every one of the Middle East Muslim countries was supplied by the old USSR, the old Soviet. All of their weapons are Russian/Soviet type weapons. They're a bunch of crap. That's why we beat them so easily. And then their battle planning is based on the Soviet system. And I remember studying in the United States, military, Army, and the Marine Corps in particular, we are not willing to go over 10% casualties. When we go into battle planning, we'll do everything we can to stay away from a Gettysburg-type engagement.
Oh, yeah.
And we are not happy with, if it goes to 10% casualties, then we sit down and figure a different way to do it. And that's exactly what MacArthur did in New Guinea. In New Guinea, they took about 20% casualties. MacArthur sat down and figured out his island hopping and just starving the Japs out of the war. Under the Soviet system, it fits in perfectly with the Muslim system. It's based on suicide waves. You saw it in Korea, you saw it in Vietnam, and you saw it in the Battle of Stalingrad, where Lenin came up with a dictum that was there is quality and quantity. In other words, they can send out 100,000 soldiers with 10,000 weapons, and as the guys in the front get killed, then the guys in the back pick up the rifle and go on, which we would never tolerate.
Right.
But this fits in perfect with the Muslim paradigm of you get killed in war and you get your 72 virgins and 28 little boys. It's your choice, making 100. A lot of people don't know that. So the commie, all of the Muslim countries in the Middle East, all have been supported and defended, supplied in both material and philosophy from the communists. So now they're coming here at the United States, and so it's up to us, Code 20, all you guys, look at March 12th. Hopefully it's just a bunch of baloney and it'll fizzle, but why not use that as a time of preparedness and get your stuff all organized, get your teams lined up, get your rally points lined up. What are you going to do if this thing bursts? I mean, If they're only 1% of the whole United States, that's 3 million people. We've only got about a million, million and a half in the entire military, and most of those guys are overseas now. So this March 12th deal, I think, Dutch, I think you nailed it. I think this could be a big day.
Yeah, you know, I don't say live in fear of it, but like Steve says, use it as an indicator to prepare that they are serious. You may go, well, but they're communists and Muslim. Who cares? Their common goal is chaos. And ultimately, they both work for the same boss, Satan, so they really are on the same side. And if you talk to our friend Peter Hammond, he'll tell you that the communists and the Muslims in the Sudan walk hand in hand while they kill Christians.
Yeah, both want to destroy America. If they can destroy America, then they can spread the communism. The Muslims are using the communists. The communists are using the Muslims. They're all, and Dutch nailed it. They're all based on Satan. So that'll be interesting to watch. Now, I've been pulling out my old books from, no kidding, 35, 40 years ago on cell warfare, guerrilla warfare. And I have one that's on the history of guerrilla warfare. It's called War in the Shadows. Hmm. By Robert B. Asprey. It's you can get it on. It's about, I'd say, about 1,500 pages long. It's,
wow.
Yeah, it's two volumes, making a tome of about 1,500 pages, and it goes back to Alexander the Great, and it talks about hundreds and hundreds of different guerrilla cell warfare wars since recorded history. So once again, the name of the book is War in the Shadows, and the author is Robert B. Like Boy Asprey. You should be able to pick up both books for less than $7 used through Amazon.com.
Hmm.
I'm bringing my copies. Now, I went back. I was studying the war in between the Muslims in Algeria and the French. And when I was doing that, Dutch and I have been working together, and we actually found that a number of clips from the movie called the Battle of Algiers. So if you really want to start learning this stuff, which I suggest, Day of Rage and what you're seeing over in Egypt, and Dutch is right. I'm not afraid.
No.
Dutch is not afraid. I mean, I look at this like, well, you know, this is all part of history. You can sit around and drink beer and think about the Super Bowl, or you can, you know, go out there and sharpen up your bayonet and things like that. So there's two things that really will help you to understand guerrilla warfare. The one is the book War in the Shadows, Robert B. Asprey, and he's a bad example. He's great on recording history. He's great on criticizing the military for only using the M in RPM, religious, political, and military. And then he makes what he thinks is great strides in how to counter guerrilla warfare,
oh,
the Muslim Brotherhood, the Day of Rage. He adds the P in there, so he's political and military, but he leaves out the most important part, and that's the R for religion. All of these things, government, are all based on RPM, religious, political, and military. We've talked about this before. Now, this guy comes in, and he thinks that you don't need to worry about religion, just like the communists in the Day of Rage, thinking, well, we don't have to worry about religion and the Muslims. Was like, stupid. As soon as you get what you want, the Muslims are going to cut your head off very slowly and do it in front of your girls as they rape you. So we're working on that. And then in conjunction with that, you can go onto YouTube, bring up YouTube and type in the Battle of Algiers with English subtitles. The Battle of Algiers with English subtitles. And they'll come up. There's about 7 or 8 of these. You can actually watch the whole movie, and it's extremely good for learning how cell warfare works. You want to zero in, look at number 5, number 6, and number 7. And then number 7, the guy will actually show you how they organize their secret cells so they can't be broken and stuff like that. So those two things, we're going to be discussing those on the Day of Rage, March 12th, up at Cahuilla. And we've got some great stuff going. Dutch, the pastor, to both of our surprises, is opening up the mail list, and he's going to let us.
I'm amazed at that, but that's a blessing.
Yeah, go ahead. Take over.
Oh, yeah, that's a great blessing because we've got hundreds of people that support the patriotic cause, that support the church, that are friends of the church, that need to get this message and need to know about this training. And the pastor, Warren Mark Campbell, is 1,000% behind us, and this just proves that even more. When he's using church resources to make sure the training facilities are up to snuff for people to come out, he's been talking about it in his different sermons about what we're doing and how we differ from other churches because we open our doors to train the sheep to become sheepdogs, because that's truly what we are. Guys like Steve and I and those of you that listen to Liberty Tree Radio and Stronghold Radio, you're sheepdogs. You're still sheep of Jesus Christ, but you've got some fangs. And you're here to fight the wolves in the woods. And so we've got a bunch of opportunities coming up. I mean, I'm just amazed at the opportunities right now. We're talking, we could make these week-long training things if people showed an interest. We could run a boot camp up here if we had to. And but we take baby steps. We move in that direction. What we need is community participation and buy-in. When I say community, I mean the Christian militant community, not the hippies living around us.
We'll put a big sign out there, hippies need not apply. Or, if you wish, Mr. Hippie, you can be our moving target.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, pastors really grabbed this, and I thought, well, like you said, no, he'll never release that. And I thought, well, it's nothing ventured, nothing gained. Sure. I was totally shocked. So part of this deal, okay, so March 12th, we got the Day of Rage for the commie bedwetters with the Muslims who are going to chop off the heads of the commie bedwetters. Although these commie bedwetters are really, they're the militant ones, the guys that'll go out there and fight and burn up buildings. However, I think if somebody fought back against them, I think they'd pee their pants. I don't think they could handle it.
Yeah, and what's curious to me is we were talking about it because now you've got labor unions getting involved in this kind of stuff in Wisconsin. The labor unions are talking about a day of rage now. So you've got the governor of Wisconsin saying, I'll call out the National Guard. You pull that stuff that they're doing in Cairo. It's going to get ugly real fast.
I think it will. And so it'll be great for us on March 12th to be in the beautiful hills around Cahuilla. So that's March 12th. On April 24th, is that the day when Larry Wick is coming down?
He's going to be there May 20th. May 20th.
Okay, May 20th.
Yeah, we need people to be paid up and signed up by April 20th. That'll be right after tax day, so that's easy. So by April 20th, we need the headcount and the money in, because he and his instructors are going to fly down from Alaska. And they're not really making any money on this when you think about what a plane ticket costs these days, because he's only charging us $150 a head instead of $300. Every time
300.
Yeah, Stacy always goes 300 like the movie.
Stacy, let me hear you say that.
Say it real loud, Stacy. Say 300. Good. Now she's giggling.
300.
I don't know if you can.
Oh, dude, that sounds just like King Leonidas. Man. Two people are never smart off to is Lou and Stacy.
Yeah.
As part of this deal that we're starting to work on now, we're going to start, if the money comes in, and I think it will, we're going to start taking a certain percentage of the money and set it aside in scholarships.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
So, scholarships, so if you're like in the English Defense League in England or Australia or in Serbia, then what I would like to do in like 6 months to a year is start paying for these gentlemen to come to our training facility. Of course, they're welcome to bring their wives, too. And then we will start working with them and teaching them, and they can also teach us, because I know damn well that they have their own form of Code 20 working in Serbia, Kosovo, Albania, and in Australia. Otherwise, they couldn't survive. So I know that they've networked, and they've got their own teams. They got their stuff set up. So this is going to be really an exciting time here in the next year if we can get past the Day of Rage. But once again, if they go in one direction, I can guarantee you right now, they're nowhere near as organized as Dutch, myself, Christian Guardians, the fellas and gals that we have there at Cahuilla. They're no match for us. They ain't going to win. So we got no problems there.
Well, and they rely on the mob mentality. Watched those Algiers videos, and there's the one young man that was whipping everybody up into a rage to go into the battle. as they were approaching. They're going through the maze of buildings, and like the little boy comes up. He's like, "Don't go down there. They'll kill you. They'll kill you." And he's like, "No, don't worry about it." And they rely on mass numbers, like you said earlier in this half hour. They don't care about quality of life. They don't care about any of that. And it's almost a drug to them. And they're not going to have any training. They're not. It's going to be like fighting, you know, a herd of bulls, but you can still do it.
Right.
And if you do it wisely, there's no risk. In fact, it works to your benefit that they're a bunch of brain dead, you know, zombies wanting to come down the street.
Exactamundo. Yeah, as I was reading about how the French, under some of their commanders, kind of like Custer, a lot of people don't realize he was pretty darn good. But the French, with several of their commanders, were able to do what Dutch said. And they were able to take only like 6,000 French and defeat 48,000, 8-1 odds against the Muslims over there. Where they got themselves into trouble is the same thing that we're doing in Iraq and Afghanistan. Have you seen any of the Restrepo yet?
Yes, I have. I've gotten about halfway through it, and I've seen where they have the listening post, and they go into the village and all that kind of stuff, and the different ambushes they engage in.
Right. If the United States Army and Marine Corps had gone in there with the intention of just sending a message to the Muslim world, if you don't tread on me. If you injure me, we will hit you with such ferocity, you will never want to see us again. But we made a huge mistake and went in there and tried to build nations. I don't know. Have you gotten to the part there in Restrepo? Is these poor American soldiers, they're very well trained, they're very good, they're good patriots, but their leaders are complete buffoons and idiots and are setting these poor kids up to be murdered. Mm. And have you gotten to the part where the captain is trying to persuade the village elders?
Yes.
They're all Taliban.
He goes, "We'll build a road. We'll make you money." Because that's what they told. Hearts and minds. I kept saying that. Hearts and minds. Hearts and minds.
I had to take my sweatshirt off. I was getting a little warm.
Yeah, it's getting hot in here, too. But yeah, they just spent their time trying to... The very same people that they were meeting with were going out that same night and planning raids on them. And I also like...
Well, exactly.
When I think it was a general or a colonel showed up, this guy in full tactical gear, and he had his weapon. He wasn't even holding it properly. He could barely walk when he got off the helicopter. And they take him, and he goes, "Okay, well, give me a rundown of what's going on in this valley, Captain." It was Captain Kearney. He goes, "Well, that's the 62nd parallel or whatever it is on the map." He goes, "We can't go past that." He goes, "We go past that, that's held by the enemy. That's their sanctuary. So everything between here and there, we engage them in here and that village over there and that village over there." And it's such a flashback to Vietnam for me. Not that I was there, but to the movies I've seen about Vietnam, things my friends have told me and other guys in the military, it's like, yeah, we can't go past that line. But they'll go down into that, and the same old redded, they dye their beards this weird red color, and they're all promising them everything, and it's the same guys the next day that are shooting at them.
It's
just like the general plan with the Viet Cong. You know, let's go into the villages, give them rice and medical care, and then by night they'll attack us.
Yeah, and that goes, now the British thought that they were pretty clever, tagging on with what Dutch is saying. They would take the elders from Afghanistan, the Khyber Rifles, and from Iraq, and Muammar Gaddafi from Libya, take them back to England and think that they would assimilate. Well, the end result is, look at England today. It's overrun with these filthy mongrels known as Muslims.
They came, they saw, they liked, they moved in, you know.
And grabbed for the English girl with the boot, too.
There's
a lot of that going on. So, yeah, that the Battle of Algiers, you can go to YouTube, just type in the Battle of Algiers with English subtitles, and you want to look at number 5, number 6, number 7. If you look at number 4, it'll actually go through how they started accumulating through terror and individual murders. What they would do is they would have somebody would walk by with a basket, and in the basket would be a pistol. And then the guy that was going to murder the cop would reach into the basket, shoot the guy, throw to death a cop from about 2 feet away, throw the pistol back into the basket. So it's classic warfare, cell warfare. And you can't hunt it down. Now, colonel in the French forces that comes in there, he's pretty smart. He recognizes this, and he's going through how the checkpoints don't work, all of the classical stuff that we did wrong in Vietnam and all that stuff. And he gets pretty close. He starts saying, well, look, we got to bring in the not only military, but we have to become police. And all of his commanders groan. Now, he's doing the same thing that War in the Shadows is. He's thinking, well, we're not going to win by military only, but if we bring in the police, a.k.a. the politics, then we can do it. But he completely throws out Islam, never pays attention to Islam, and so he sets himself up for total failure. And so that's when we're doing our training there at Cahuilla. We're going to be talking about RPM, religious, political, military. We're going to be talking about the stuff in Islam. But the main thing is, in this type of warfare, if you know you can't convert these Taliban guys, which you can't, maybe one in a thousand.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it goes back to biblical prophecy where it says in Genesis 12, Ishmael was a wild man, a donkey of a man, and his hand would be against everyone, and everyone's hand would be against him. And that's referring to, I believe, Muhammad later on, the religion of Ishmael.
What that means grew into.
Yeah, Ishmael, Muhammad were insane people, like a donkey. They're at war with everybody. Their hand will be at war. And I think that's biblical prophecy. The missionaries have never succeeded to any significant degree in opening up the Muslim world at all, period.
We've had there's been a missionary from the church at Cahuilla in the Gulf of Aden since the 1960s, and he comes to visit every year and tells us what he's done. And you can count on one hand how many people he considers converted in that entire time.
Right.
He hands out Bibles, but he doesn't know where they end up. He feeds the poor.
Oh, they throw them away.
He does all that, but he says, I can tell you only five people have converted. So what we've gotten is about a 70-year-old man with a really good Arabic accent now that speaks really good Farsi and Arabic or whatever. But you know, but then people say, but it's worth five, you know, those five converted. But, you know, but that's the truth. They're not going to convert like they will when we sent missionaries to Africa and India and Latin America. So that's
Yeah, so something like that, you try to convert them, that's okay. They're not trying to kill this missionary. But to send that missionary amongst those Taliban elders that you saw there, he's not going to last. He's going to get killed. So in that case, what you do, using a retribution in accordance with Romans 13, you know, that the civil magistrate is the wrath of God, etc., then you go in on a limited, you get like 10 days to whack as many of the bad guys as you possibly can, you get the hell out of there. And what's really interesting under Islam, once you do that, then they're willing to listen to you.
Yeah, they'll see that you definitely have the power.
Yeah. You just do it from afar. You get a radio with somebody that speaks Arabic or Farsi, and you broadcast it in, and you do it that way. But you never invite them to come into your community, because once you do that, they're cell warfare. Okay, so you invite 1,000 in, and only one guy is a bad guy. Well, he's not a bad guy, like sending your kid to public school. I mean, that's a dumb thing to do, but there's nobody in the public school who really is going to do a suicide bomb. But if you have 1,000 of these characters come in and one's a suicide bomber, how do you know when he's going to blow you away, when he's giving away information and things of that nature, too? So that's all part and parcel of this. So War in the Shadows is a great book, Amazon.com. It's a real easy read if you are into politics and war at all, and you need to be, because our enemy right now is War in the Shadows by Robert B. Asprey. And before you get that, just go to YouTube, look up the Battle of Algiers with French-English subtitles, bingo, and you're going to start understanding and learning this. The French colonel actually shows the triangles, how they organize and how they keep it secret, the stuff for teaching up there at the church of Cahuilla. And so we're going to be doing the same thing on the Day of Rage there in Cahuilla, and I'm going to kind of take a break.
Yeah, I love the idea that we're doing something for God on the same day that a bunch of idiots are going to be doing something for Satan. You know, it just shows that the timing is not by chance that both groups picked the same date, you know. And our impact will be everlasting. I don't know what their impact will be, but I bet the media doesn't even cover what they're doing. They'll make it look like, oh, isn't this great? A bunch of students demanding peace and harmony and, you know, not they won't read the actual statement from the Communist Workers Party that I read. But a couple of things from history and current events. We're talking about Algiers. What a lot of people don't realize is that a group of French soldiers and legionnaires actually, angry at the way that France was handling the war in Algiers, seceded from France and tried to take Algiers as their own nation, if I'm not mistaken. And that went on for a while. That went on for a while too. I remember studying some of that stuff back in world history, that the French soldiers were like, no way, we fought and died for this country, now you're going to give it to the Muslims, we're going to take it. And there was a period when that happened in the late 50s, early 60s, I think it was. I'll research that before, but that popped into my head. And then you talked about inviting them in. A classic case is the Soviet Union working with the Muslims, in Africa specifically to kill Christians since the 60s, the Congo and all that stuff going on there. You know, there were Cubans there. It was just a nasty Rhodesian army. You study that history. Now look what's happening in Russia. A woman yesterday blew herself up in a shopping mall. They've killed hundreds of students in a school. They've killed hundreds of people in movie theaters. These are the same Muslims that they embraced and armed, but look at what's happening to them. And they were friends to these Muslims. They armed them. What does every terrorist shoot? An AK-47. Where did he get it? From a Soviet bloc nation.
Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Yep.
And now it's blown up in their face. And even the former, you know, KGB guy Putin himself doesn't know how to deal with them. These Chechens, they haven't had a shooting war in Chechnya in about 10 years, but it's still nagging them. They went into Afghanistan to secure the fuel lines and stuff, and they were sent with their tail between their legs. They thought they could befriend them, be nice to them, and they're getting it almost worse than we are. Granted, they haven't had any planes fly into any buildings or anything. You know, whether it was manipulated or not, I'm not going to get into that. But their death count is actually higher than ours because it's been consistent and ongoing in former Soviet Union.
Absolutely.
And then we talk about this all the time. Everybody in America goes, you know, oh, we had 3,000 people die when the Twin Towers fell. Well, there were another 3,000 that died all across the country when Muslims saw that and were empowered by it. In I think it was in Kenya, they saw a pregnant woman come out of a church and a crowd of about 50 literally tore her limb from limb because they saw the images on TV where it was attributed to, you know, what the Muslims had done, and they were like, great, it's time to go. Let's kill the Christians. So you can't negotiate. You can't buy them off. No. You invite them into your country, they're going to destroy you. Look at the war, Clinton's war in the Balkans. Nothing was settled. They just sent the UN in to kill everybody on all sides and tell them to stop fighting, and they're still fighting. They just don't talk about it anymore, you know. And,
yeah, that was absolutely horrible.
Yeah, and that war started in World War II when the Nazis went in and sided with the Muslims.
Exactly.
So it's, you know, Muslims are a huge problem. Everybody, well, why are you talking about the Muslims? Why aren't we talking about the Zionists? Well, last time I know, you know, I know that we have many enemies, but I can't think of the last time a rabbi put on a suicide bomb and walked into a movie theater in Russia. I can't find it anywhere. I'm not befriending Israel in this, but I'm telling you that these Muslims, everywhere they go, they bring trouble, and it goes back to that Genesis quote that you just said. That they're like,
absolutely,
they will be a trouble to everyone that they encounter.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's prophecy. The New World Order started off with Rothschilds and the Bilderbergers and all those other guys. Those guys are long gone. And now the people that came in with the cash after the Yom Kippur War in 1973 are the Middle East Muslims with all of the oil. They bought up like Citibank and all
of the
other ones. Citibank, when I like to watch college football. I look at the Rose Bowl. There's Citibank's logo on there, and Citibank's one of the biggest suppliers of funds to the families of suicide bombers, and they work with Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, on and on and on. So I know a lot of people really are intense on the New World Order, but from what I can see, the Muslims are outside of the New World Order, and the Muslims control an awful lot of the banks. The Saudi Arabians have pretty much taken over the banking system in Switzerland. So the New World Order kind of the stage for everybody, and they got all of their links and Kissinger and all of those characters together. But when the Yom Kippur War popped up, all of that Niagara Falls of money into the Muslim coffers, they pretty much, from what I can see, are really using the New World Order as a shield. I want to go back to Algeria. I'm looking in War in the Shadows. Turkey held Algeria, and they were using it, the naval ports in Algeria, to attack the French fleet and kidnap the sailors, and they were actually, Muslims were going up into Ireland, Scotland, and England, kidnapping the girls and raping them and selling them. Yeah, we have that, all kinds of documentation. So what happened was the French, in retribution, came in, and they attacked Algiers, and they won so quickly because the Muslims didn't know what was going on. They were naval fighters. The French didn't realize they hadn't won. They'd won a beachhead. But then, just like us being in Iraq and Afghanistan, they stayed too long. And then, like Dutch said, they started building up their own markets and businesses. They didn't go there to start a colony. The colony happened as a result of the French defeating the Muslims to stop them from capturing their naval ships, etc. So they got peace in Algeria, they thought. Now the Muslims have a word called Hudna, H-U-D-N-A, where they, if they're being whipped, they will cry, treaty, 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 Hudna, 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 and they will use that just so that they can gain strength, and then they will attack. So what happened was the French initially won, and then the French soldiers were telling their family back in France, hey, if you come over here, you can get coffee and tobacco and all this other stuff for pennies on the dollar. So the families of the French started coming to Algeria.
That explains it.
And yep, and they started taking over. But then the Muslims got disgusted with that, and so they began doing their Code 20. And then they started attacking, and then they turned it into the quagmire that Algeria was, the Battle of Algiers.
We're losing you.
Taking control, seized, and left the ports alone, sailed around, and if they saw any Algerian ships, they should have whacked them and killed them all because they're pirates, you know, the law of nations. But once they went in, and then, like we're trying to do in Afghanistan and in Iraq, that's insane. And sure enough, then it turned into the nightmare that it was. And people today, your historians today, think that the French went there to create a colony. No, they went to end piracy, and then it became a colony, and then it became a nightmare because they tried to assimilate with the Muslims. It will not work, as Dutch said. I think it's prophecy from the Old Testament. Don't try to assimilate with those guys.
Yeah, don't give your sons and daughters over to them. Don't try to adapt to their ways. It's not meant to be. You know, heaven's a different story. When we all get to heaven, you know, and then all the different tribes can get together. But I strongly believe that there's a reason the Tower of Babel occurred.
Yeah, there won't be too many Muslims in heaven.
Yeah, no. It's funny you say, you know, how few convert. And it's funny because I was talking about our training online, and Stacy was talking about it, and somebody got all offended that we're training foreigners, even though they're American nationals, but they're foreigners. How, you know, why are you training them? I said, look, once they become Christian and it's a sincere conversion, they're my brother. Period.
Oh, amen.
And when they ask for me to help them in some way, it's not just a duty, it's an honor that they come to me. You know, that they would say, hey, we want to pick your brain. And it goes both ways, because like you said earlier in the first half hour, we can learn from them too. You know, even when I'm teaching, I'm still watching because there are things I can pick up on.
Absolutely.
But to enable a person who can maybe go back to visit Pakistan because he has family, he may not be able to take a case of weapons with him. He may not even be able to take a Bible with him. But that knowledge that we imparted on him, that is recorded in his little fleshy brain, he can share that with people over there, and it's a force multiplier. So you're darn right, I will teach a sincere convert how to fight.
Yeah, the young man you're talking about, actually, he's about fifth-generation Christian. His father-in-law is a pastor, and I met them all, and they're bona fide Christians. Absolutely. We have another fellow. His father was grilled in the Philippines. A lot of people don't realize that. I think we talked about it a little bit. The Filipino guerrillas were some bad dudes, and they actually They got pensions and stuff. They fought very valiantly and very aggressively, and they showed no mercy, no quarter on the Japanese. So we're honored to have one fellow there. I'm not going to say his name.
Yeah. Okay, we're losing you a little bit there. Are you moving your phone around? Hello? Are you there? Looks like he hung up. He'll call back. But he's right. The Filipino heritage.
Hello, who is it?
It's a big bad wolf.
Yeah.
My, what big teeth you have, Grandma. I don't know, I just got disconnected.
Yeah, it started to fade and then it got disconnected. So let me get rid of that buzz. I know what the buzz is. The buzz is the screen on the phone. But you're right about the Philippines. We were just watching a thing on the guerrilla fighters. I can't remember the guy's name. The head of the guerrilla regiment. It was like El Mariano or something. He died in battle trying to save American sailors and stuff. They were incredible fighters, starting with sticks. And they would find Japanese soldiers and just swarm them to get their weapons. It's just incredible story occurred in the Philippines. And it's sad now that in this documentary we were watching that it's Muslims are taking over in the Philippines now. And
Mindanao.
Yeah, and the Christian heritage is being forced out, just like the story in Indonesia.
Well, that brings up the reason they sent the army over into the Philippines originally was, after the War of 1898, they didn't realize that Mindanao was a Muslim island.
Yeah, when they sent Blackjack Pershing over there, and the
exactly.
MacArthur that we know, his father was fighting there.
Exactly, yeah. So those guys have been fighting against the Muslims for, 14 centuries.
Yeah.
And they're great guys. And, it's just the body of Christ is for everybody if you're born again. Now, I work with a guy who's former Taliban and another guy who is a PhD in music, and he led the Cairo Philharmonic.
Wow.
They're really interesting guys. Yeah, the Taliban guy came over to the United States to start a mosque, a Taliban mosque in Texas.
Huh.
And he came to the Lord, and that was about 15 years ago. What's really interesting is the rest of his family are still Muslims.
Oh, wow, so that's going to be tough.
Yeah, and what's really bizarre, he's a little bitty guy, he's maybe 5 feet tall. It's really funny. He speaks with a Texas drawl. So when I was doing my television show with him, I gave him my 10-gallon hat, which went down over his ears, and we did the show, and he's doing it in English. We were having a ball doing it, but he's the bona fide, he's the real issue. And the guy who was the leader of the Philharmonic in Cairo, he's a born again Christian. And when I had him on the TV show, there's a lot of people, they get mad at me when I say, look, all Muslims are terrorists.
Yeah.
So I said to both of these guys, one at a time, in private, before the show, I said, are all Muslims terrorists? And both of them, the Taliban guy, said, of course they are. And then when I asked the leader of the Philharmonic in Cairo, he says, I'm telling you right now, when I was a Muslim, even though I never killed anybody, I was giving my money to the mosque, I was helping the mosque, I was a terrorist, absolutely, even though I didn't kill anybody. He says, I would have helped my Muslim brothers, I would have helped them kill the Americans.
Okay, you're fading again.
I wonder what's going on. I wonder if my battery's low.
Are you moving?
I'm moving now. How's the sound?
It sounds good now. It goes completely blank with just a low hiss.
All right, I'm going to go to another place. Well, anyways, you go ahead and talk while I rearrange my papers,
sure,
okay?
Sure, sure, sure. And that's a key thing that Steve's talking about there. The Muslim Student Association has a creed that basically says in that creed, and I'll ask him, he may have it in front of him, I can't get, it's on my other computer that died, that jihad is their life. And people can tell you, oh, jihad just means struggle against sin. No, jihad is a war against the infidel. That's what it is. So when the Muslim Student Association has in their creed that jihad is their life, that's what they mean. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Listening to you. I'm digging up that creed for you right now. It'll take me a couple of
Sure. I had it on my computer ready to go, but that's the one that burned up. So hopefully it didn't burn up.
It'll take me 2 or 3 minutes to find it. What's interesting? Did you see how Sergeant R, he did the same thing? He took their creed and he made it into a Christian creed.
Yeah, I like that. You know,
that was awesome. It was really good. So, yeah, no, there's ways that obviously we're going to defeat them. But it's just like, and then a lot of Christians go, well, we know, I've read the book, we know we're going to win, you know. Well, okay, fine. Well, if we took that in World War II or the Revolutionary War, nobody would have done anything. And guess what? We wouldn't have won. So I'm digging for my papers.
Yeah, that's the point.
About.
So many people go, well, I don't have to participate because you're already doing it. And when they say that to me, I just want to slap them. It's like, well, okay, let's say, and that was my Bible study last Sunday. It's like, I don't want to hear anybody in this church telling me there isn't something for them to do in the holy cause of liberty. You know, if you can't be out there, because we got an 85-year-old World War II vet that when we train, he can barely walk. He puts a chair out on the range and he watches us and he's still there. You know? And that's Fred, the guy who does the Sunday school lessons and stuff. And last Sunday, he got up and he read, it's funny, it was the poem, Stranger, I think is what it's called. Whenever they do the Mark Kornke show, they play it on Liberty Tree Radio. So we have it memorized. I can't remember the name of it. But he got up and that was his Sunday school lesson. He just read that. And then I got up after him not knowing he was going to do that. And I had this whole thing talking about, you know, the holy cause of liberty, everyone has a duty. And so I get so angry. Well, you know, there's militias out there. I'm just counting on them. And I'm counting on my government to keep the Muslims away from us. And, you know, I know we win in the end. I've read it. So I just sit back. Well, if you can't participate, you need to. You were talking about scholarships. We have an older couple at our church. When I first got to the church 5 years ago, I had nothing. I had lost everything in a fire in San Bernardino, those huge fires down there. And there was a shooting class coming up, and it was like $200 or $300, and plus the ammo. And they're like, well, you should take it. I go, I got zero money. You know, I'm living on just whatever I had left. And they paid for me. And I said, you shouldn't do that. And they go, well, we can't take the class anymore. One guy, he since passed away. He was like 92 at the time. He says, but you can take it. You know, and so that's what I'm talking about, is people, if they can't put their body forward, put their efforts and their resources forward and fund somebody. We have what's called a Patriot Fund at the church. We found out about a pastor at a, what do they call those things, Calvary Chapels, you know, food Christianity. He got a sermon of ours, studied it, and then taught on it, and he got fired. So we heard he got fired, so the church got together and they sent him like a month's pay or something, because it took him about a month to find another job. And so you've got to be willing to stand up for other patriots like that and other fighters. And what's the formula? I've heard different ones. I think yours is the greatest. You said it's like 99-1 to keep a fighter in the field for support. Did you hear me? Oh, don't tell me he got cut off again. Says he's still there. Hello, Steve Areno. Earth to Steve. Well, anyway, along that line, I don't know if he'll come back or not. Today is the day of...
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Sorry. What's the ratio of partisan supporters to one guerrilla fighter in the field that you teach?
Well, Mousy Tongue said it took 100 families to support one guerrilla warrior. Now, that's that was under an agrarian system, with the Muslim Brotherhood being financed by Saudi Arabia. It's probably only 20-1.
Mm-hmm.
And the community around here, what happens is that the Saudi Arabians are pretty much funding the terrorists, but then they hide from house to house, and then the hotels that are owned by the Muslims, the hotels are just really, that's their freeway, how they get all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing, we're so small at this point in time, that it's really interesting. There's the long train of abuses. For example, in the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson, until he saw his kid murdered and his house burned down, he wasn't going to fight. Now, when we get to that point in time, then I estimate at least 20% of the Americans will begin to jump in. So 20%, that'd be 5-1. And then, of course, with Code 20, we're going to be like the tip of the spear. We're going to be so well prepared. We'll be like the 101st Airborne or the Marine Corps. Then at at that time, we go from Code 20 into more or less regular warfare with the whole intent of, you know, shoving those guys back to Saudi Arabia.
Right, right. Did you find your creed?
I think I did.
Because that was amazing to me that that is a student union's creed. Muslim Student Association that is... Now, it is illegal for foreign agents of a country to be unregistered in America. Remember the Holy Land Foundation and all that stuff? How is this any different when this is their creed, that their creed is to take over?
Yeah, as long as they don't say that we... like when I met with the FBI, they said to me, did you hear them say we advocate the violent overthrow of America? And I looked at them and started laughing. I said, nobody's that stupid. They're not going to say that. And so they have not said that they advocate the violent overthrow. They've said that they want to replace the Constitution with the Quran and the Hadith.
Yeah.
But as long as they don't say we believe in the violent overthrow, then there's nothing we can do. I thought I had it, but it's still...
I guess that's why they don't come after me, because I just keep saying when it all falls apart, we'll be here to rebuild. So I guess that keeps me in the safe zone, too, or they haven't come and finally shut me down. But
that's why Code 20, you know, we are very peaceful and whatnot. But if they come after us, then we're no longer peaceful. Then we're self-defense, totally different. Mm-hmm. And that's very constitutional, very legal, no problem at all.
Yeah, speaking of constitutional, I found it funny watching last year at the University of Irvine down there, and I think it's in Orange County. They had a representative from Israel, some ambassador was up speaking, and all in unison, about 50 to 100 Islamic students stood up and started screaming at this person, denying them the right to speak, denying them the right to be heard, and they were arrested. Well, this week, the attorney, the DA for that district there, decided to charge several of those students, saying that it was a conspiracy. They organized, they denied somebody their First Amendment rights, and they had this Muslim female lawyer on, which was kind of strange. And she says, it's our constitutional right to get up and have free speech. We are being denied our and I'm like, you're claiming a right of something that you deny should even exist. You know, and it was just, I couldn't believe they had her on Fox, and I was laughing the whole time, and I couldn't believe they let her talk, because she's saying, you know, our rights were violated when we were arrested. You know, they stood up and screamed in a public venue. I mean, at the very least, they should be charged with disorderly conduct, and then disrupting a public meeting. There's all kinds of laws. So to say that what they did while they were, you know, and I'm no fan of Israel, they were disrupting an Israeli representative from speaking, that is somehow free speech, and that for the officers at the campus, God bless them, that went in and dragged them out, the only thing would have been better is if they'd have tased them, you know. Don't tase me, infidel, don't tase me, infidel, but they didn't do that, so they just dragged them out. And I'm sure, you know, the ACLU and Southern Poverty Law Center, they're all going to rush to their defense now that the attorney, the DA for Orange County is going to try them. But yet they scream for the very protection that they're going to deny us when they gain power.
Yeah, under Sharia law, the Muslim has to win. Now, a lot of people don't, you know, then you'll hear the Muslim like that gal. Well, First Amendment. Well, what she means is under Sharia law, Dutch Jones, me, Stacy, Lewis, Ruger, we're all second class. As long as the Muslim has control and the Muslim wins, that's their definition of justice. And so what you're seeing there is they're actually implementing Sharia law as they do what they're doing, and they believe they're being just. They believe that we are being unjust. For example, I got into a fist fight with a big Muslim terrorist about a week before 9/11. He was in my office, and he was threatening my wife and me, and I told him to get out, and finally I just drilled him, knocked him around pretty good. And he's a big guy. He says, you cannot hit me, you cannot hit me. And I said, why not? He says, you are the Christian, you cannot hit. Well, he meant it in two ways. He meant it, one, that I couldn't hit because Jesus would turn the cheek. But the other way he meant it was, I'm a Muslim, I'm better than you, you're a servant, you cannot hit me.
Yeah.
Which I counseled him and said very quickly, watch this, and it was over very fast. But it's what Dutch is saying, so I just can't find that darn quote.
You know, I've got it somewhere. I think I've got it. I stored it on my Yahoo. Well, if I can get to my Yahoo, I can find it. But But you're right. They don't want an even playing field because they're tyrants. They're evil. And the minute you start calling them on it, what do? They immediately seek the protection of the things that of which they seek to abolish. It's just like they're women. Their women are lesser, and they don't want their women equal, but when they need them for combat, sure enough, they're willing to train them and send them into combat, strap bombs on them. That last suicide bomber in Russia, I keep wanting to say USSR, was in fact a woman. They're using more and more women to do so-called warfare, which even violates their own decrees.
Yeah, in fact, they're calling them, those women, they call them the Black Widows. They're the widows of the Chechen massacre when the Russians went in and killed all of the guys after the... And so these are the widows who survived, and now they call them the Black Widows, and they're going in and blowing up the people because that's what Muhammad would do.
Yeah, he would sacrifice that. Let's see here.
Not himself, but everybody else. Whereas Jesus sacrificed himself, it's really interesting to see how... You know, and once again, that goes back to Genesis 12, where it says Ishmael would be a wild man, a donkey of a man, and his hand would be against everyone, which I believe it means that he's insane. He's a crazy man, and we know for a fact that Muhammad was insane. He had epilepsy, and he heard voices, the satanic verses by Salman Rushdie. Was he actually said in one of the verses in the Quran that he wasn't sure if it was from Satan or who it was, and then they cut those verses out, but everybody who's a Muslim scholar know that they still exist, and Salman Rushdie published that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was a madman, crazy man, no doubt.
Well, and I guess when you look at it, I mean, if they weren't insane, they wouldn't be our enemies. You know, if they had any intelligence to them, they would be following the law of God and not creating, you know, this false religion and creating these false governments and subjecting people to torture and horrible, unspeakable things if they weren't insane. So, you know, it goes back to people go, well, you're dehumanizing your enemy. No, he chose to do that to himself. If he acts in a subhuman manner, I'm not making him do that. I can't find anywhere in history where we went to the Middle East and said, yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. We really like it. You know, we tell them, hey, here's our example. Our missionaries went, even our militaries go and say, this is the alternative. But if you choose to ignore it, that's, you know, we can't make them become civilized and love their neighbor and follow the Ten Commandments. We can't force them to do it. Just like we shouldn't
Correct.
Force them to obey it. You know, we're not like them.
Exactly.
It's not convert or die. So they choose to become our enemies by how they live. It goes back to the basics of you'll know your enemy by how they conduct themselves. You know, and their fruits show
yep.
that their religion is a gutter, hateful, vile religion. Yeah, I can't find it either. We'll have to make that maybe for next Tuesday. We'll find that because it's worth noting. I'm looking all over my good computer and I can't find it on there. But
yeah, I think we're pretty much coming to the end of time, aren't we?
Yeah, I just looked down and that's it because Lou's not here to give me any time cues because he's asleep. He fell asleep here since he has nothing to do. But this this has been a guerrilla version of the Dutch Jones radio program because we lost our main computer. I'm literally sending it over this really old backup computer.